All right, I have had a massive week, so I'm just going to jump straight into it. And I'm going to start by talking about something which I touched on last week, which was when I showed you boxes and boxes of Ubiquiti network bits. All the boxes are gone now, and the contents of all the boxes are now very comfortably residing in a restaurant a few kilometers that way, which is run by a friend of mine. So last week I spoke about writing a course on Ubiquiti, which is going to do stuff like answer the question of why do you need so many bits? So I often hear people ask this. And just in case you've sort of missed me talking about this before, Ubiquiti is sort of the network bits, or at least the Unify product suite within Ubiquiti, is the network bits where you have separate access points, and then you have a switch, and then you have a controller, and then you have a security gateway, and you have sort of different bits that you use to componentize your network in whichever way you see fit. Now, I built that out in my home last year. I have been very, very happy with it. I paid a lot of money for all the bits, and it was money well spent. And fortunately, now they are paying me to write a course about it because it seems that everyone quite likes what I had to say about Ubiquiti. So that was the backstory. I put all of the bits in my mate's restaurant yesterday, which was a great use case because it's a restaurant that spread out over some distance. He's sort of got a couple of indoor areas. There's an outdoor area. They want the staff to be able to use things like iPads in order to take orders, but the connectivity was so crap that they basically couldn't do it. So this was a really good place to say, let's take the bits, put them in the restaurant, and then that will be the course, or that will certainly be an important part of the course. So yesterday I did that, and all the bits went in there. There was a security gateway, a cloud key, a switch, an HD access point. There was also an in-wall access point, and also one of the little mesh units with the rabbit ears up the top. So all of those went into Alfresco Italian restaurant yesterday. And this was actually kind of fun. And I think most people watching this are probably like me, where it's like, if you've got a box of technology things to play with, it's not work, right? Like, you're going to enjoy doing it. So we did this yesterday, and I filmed a little bit of it just very casually. I don't know if I'll put it up anywhere or not. It's not meant to be part of the course. It's more like, here's what was happening behind the scenes. And look, a great use case, but I learned a few things about how restaurants run in terms of the amount of shit they've got laying around the place with cables and terminals and printers and things. And all of it is like a time warp. This is like turn of the millennium sort of stuff. All the way down to the Windows XP machine, which was unpatched and running VNC and TeamViewer at the same time, and was a critical part of the infrastructure, which actually serves as the back end to the terminals that allow people to take orders. And I'm saying to this mate of mine, this is important to you, but it is so likely that it is going to fail at some point in time, if not because you get WannaCry or ransomware or something like that, then because it's just a really, really old machine that hasn't been touched probably for about 15 years, in all seriousness, maybe 10 years, either way, not good. However, the whole build went exceptionally well with all the Unify bits. Everything worked really well. We even went across the road, which was a wide road with a tram track in it, to a Japanese place to have some sushi for lunch. And we were still getting connectivity back over to the other side, which was pretty awesome. So Wi-Fi is not going to be a problem. The one drama I did have at the end of it, and it threw me at first, I think because it had been a long day and I was tired, but this Windows XP machine, we could see it on the network just fine, but it couldn't see out. It couldn't see internet. And this Windows XP machine, which apparently is a server, I know, this Windows XP machine is the back end to the terminals I mentioned before, and it's also the back end to, there's an app on an iPad, which the app looks like it's older than the iPad itself. However, the app on the iPad allows you to do this roaming ordering. It talks to a client on the server. The client on the server needs to be able to talk out over the internet. Machine couldn't get out of there over the internet. And what I later realized is the machine has a static IP address and a gateway and a DNS server, which are the old modem that it used to use. And when I say modem, this is like ADSL modem and router and Wi-Fi and everything all in one. The terminals are then hard-coded to speak to that IP address. And so then basically I'm going, well, I don't really want to change the IP address of the machine because then I've got to change the configuration of the terminals. And I don't know anything about POS terminals. So there's that. And because they're on different subnets, unfortunately, it can't see back out through the gateway, which is on the existing 192.168.1 subnet. So I'm probably going to have to go back there today, and I think I'm just going to change the subnet the entire thing runs on, and that will be that. At least everything will then be on the one, and hopefully we'll see out. Either that, or I'm going to have a look at the terminals and just see how game am I to actually change the IP address of the back end they talk to. So I didn't see that coming, but as I said, I kind of learned a little bit about how some of these places run. And in all seriousness, like if you're in a technology job and all you do is you sit there at your desk and you code or you do whatever it is you do in your tech day and you don't get to see how people actually use it, it's fascinating. And I certainly had occasions when I was in old corporate roles where I'd actually go out and see, you know, say doctor's surgery, for example, I was working in healthcare, what they actually do. And it just kind of reminded me of that. So it's very interesting to actually see people using this technology in the real world and doing all the terrible things that you would expect that they would do. All right, so that's that. I've actually got to now lay voice over it. I've got to edit it. I've got to produce it. I'm hoping to do all that over the next week. And then Ubiquiti will publish it wherever they want to publish it. They might put it on YouTube or post it themselves. I don't know. So that is the first bit of that. Now, I'm looking at my machine over here because I'm doing something that I need to check. And I'm going to explain what it is later on. It's not ready yet. It's not fully baked. I screwed something up and I'm trying to fix it quite urgently. All right, we'll come back to that. So that was Ubiquiti. We'll see that later on. Now, I wrote three blog posts this week. Two of them in particular got quite a lot of attention. The first one I want to talk about is KidsPass. Now, I want to try and put this politely and constructively because they're doing the right thing now, as best I can tell. But KidsPass is this sort of discount card for families or discount service for families in the UK. So as I understand it, you go and sign up for KidsPass and you get discounts in different places. Now, someone who follows me on the Twitters signed up to KidsPass and they got an email back, you know, welcome to KidsPass. You can sort of click here to edit your profile. And they went, oh, this is really interesting. The link to click here to edit my profile has got a number in it. And there's not a lot of digits in it. I wonder what would happen if I changed the number. And wouldn't you know it, you get someone else's data. Now, on the one hand, this is a very common risk. It's very well known. This is a direct object reference risk where the object that you see in the URL references a record directly in the database. You change the URL, you get a different record back out. Very well known. I think it's about number 4 in the OWASP top 10. So seeing it is not particularly unusual. It's always a bit facepalmy because let's face it, all you need to do to be able to be a hacker is count. But be that as it may, it's a bad risk. So the guy contacted me, he said, what should I do? I said, well, first of all, don't change any more numbers. Like, you know now that it is a risk. And this is precisely what I talked about at the AusCert conference a couple of months ago. Like once you plus one, that's enough. Don't plus two. And 3, and like all the way up to 10,000 or something. Just do one. Which was cool, so that's all he'd done. And I said, look, get in touch with them. Let them know, because if it was me running the service, I would want to know, because that's the sort of thing you want to fix. So this guy, he gets in touch with them. And I was like, okay, this is good. Like, good job or good deed done. You know, move on to the next one. And then a little bit later, he pings me and he goes, oh, they blocked me on Twitter. And I'm like, you serious? Like, they seriously blocked you? This is insane. And he sent me a screen cap of his Android phone being blocked with the Twitter app there. And I'm like, I've got to tweet this because when the people see this, they will go nuts and they will put pressure on the organization to unblock and fix. And I go to look at their profile and they blocked me as well. And they blocked me because earlier on in the day, I had done a quote tweet of one of his tweets trying to get in touch with them. And I'd only said something along the lines of, look, if anyone knows someone at KidsPass, please get in touch with them. I wasn't berating them or being, you know, inflammatory or anything like that. And God knows there are times when I am. I will acknowledge that. But this was very benign. And I'm like, this is crazy. So I, of course, tweeted out that they were blocking security researchers trying to do the right thing, and they got a barrage of people sort of piling up on them going, you know, you can't sort of do this stuff. These are legitimate people trying to do the right thing. And they did unblock me, and they messaged me and went, you know, we're looking into it. Never actually asked what the issue was, which is strange. Night goes by for me, and the next day, I've ended up writing this blog post. And the blog post, let me actually find what I wrote. So many blog posts and things now open here. This was Kids Pass just reminded us how hard responsible disclosure is. And the real lesson that I wanted to try and get across here, and again, it speaks back to that AusCert talk I did a couple of months ago, I'll link to that in my notes, is that it can be really, really hard to disclose vulnerabilities in a responsible fashion. And I talk about that in that talk, and then this is just the epiphany of that, because here we are with something which is an egregiously bad security risk. We haven't exploited it other than to just like literally add one, make sure that it's legitimate before wasting people's time reporting things. And then it's been done privately and ethically and all the rest of it. And this is what happens. So, of course, that kind of blew up on them. And they got some bad press from that, not just from the blog post I wrote, but the media did inevitably pick it up and wrote about it. And you have this thing where they were at a crossroads where they could have gone, hey, someone's trying to tell us something's broken. Let's fix it. But instead, they went the other way, and they went off in the direction of, this is not something we want to hear about. Let's try and make it go away. Doesn't really work like that on the internet, particularly once someone picks it up and they make a bit of an issue of it. So that hasn't worked out real well for them. I believe they now have security people coming in fixing things. It looks like they also had the likes of SQL injection as well, because, of course, what happens when someone gets pressed for behaving this way, they get a whole bunch of free pen tests. And some of those pen tests found other things that weren't so good. I do hope they haven't had any serious damage done to data, or that they haven't had customers disclosed en masse, as SQL injection is prone to do. But I also hope that this is a big wake-up call and they now get their shop in order. So that was those guys. Now, next thing I wrote about is I have removed the paste listing from Have I Been Pwned. So let me scroll back and explain what I had originally, what the pastes are, and what the story is now. So going back years now, I implemented a feature on Have I Been Pwned, which is effectively scraping Pastebin and several other resources where data dumps appear. And it's not always full data dumps, it's often partial data dumps, but there's just a flood of information that appears in these places. So I've got a service that goes through, crawls it, finds it, pulls it into Have I Been Pwned, sends off notifications just like the breach service does, and then it will also, or did also, have a list of the 50 most recent pastes, and there was an RSS feed which you could also monitor. So those were fine. They worked great for a number of years. No dramas. However, I always felt a little bit uncomfortable about the fact that I had an index of recent pastes that people could use to then go and find these resources, some of which have legitimate credentials in. Now, the caveat of some of them, you know, having legit credentials and others not, there's lots of stuff like spam lists. There's things like server logs. There are other places email addresses appear in paste. They get indexed by Have I Been Pwned, but they're nothing because I don't know. It's just automated, the tool. It just goes through and it goes, well, there's a lot of email addresses in that particular breach. So, you know, that was one thing. And the bit that I felt uncomfortable about was that it could be an index of data which is useful to people. Now, what ended up happening on the weekend is a lady got in touch with me on Twitter and she said, I have just found my Spotify credentials in a paste. Now, this was not on Pastebin. This was on a paste on a blogger website. And she said, I found my credentials there. I searched Have I Been Pwned and I didn't have a hit. And I'm going, okay, well, I have an option. I have a choice to make. I could load this paste in because I can ad hoc manually load any paste. It's just a URL. I put it in an Azure queue, thing picks it up, loads the data, all done. I could load this, But I know now emphatically, because I'm doing this manually, that this is legitimate data. This is this lady's username and password for Spotify and many other places, because she'd reused her password. And I'll come back to why that's important in a moment too. I could load this, but now it's going to appear on a list. And if people are monitoring this, they can go to that list and they can see that this lady has reused her credentials and they can potentially go and break into other accounts. And at that moment, I went, okay, like this is where it stops. This is where the public listing of Pace stops. Because if I remove the public listing now, I will feel comfortable loading her data. She'll get a notification email, and there are multiple Have I Been Paying subscribers that got notification emails. And yes, that will point to the paste, and she could go and see other people's credentials. But I really don't have a choice insofar as I don't know whether it's going to be legitimate or not, at least when it runs in an automated fashion. So I have to be able to link people to it, but I can remove the public visibility. So that's what I did. So I removed the paste page, removed the RSS, or at least I stopped the RSS feed from updating. So now it's just empty. I didn't want to break any dependencies without announcing it first. And that's what ended up happening. Now, the thing about the password reuse is that the lady said she did use that password in multiple places. She noticed some other account getting owned. Let me rephrase it. I remember what happened now. She had actually found someone playing, I think she said, Mexican music on her Spotify account. And she thought, this is weird because I don't normally listen to Mexican music. So she Googled her password and she found her password in a Google result, which is the page with the paste, which is the one I ultimately loaded. So you see the issue here. She's basically found her Spotify credentials dumped. And when I prompted her on it, because I've seen people many times say, hey, I've got a Spotify list of data. And when I prompted her on it and said, well, have you possibly used this password anywhere else? She said, yes, this is my password. You know, like the thing we use everywhere. And inevitably what has happened is someone has gotten one of these great big lists of credentials, gone and done their credential stuffing thing, where they take them and they try them against different services. And because she's reused her password in the place where it was exposed and in Spotify, someone's gone, hey, it matches, ergo, here are Spotify accounts. And I'll come back and talk about how I'm helping to tackle that later on in this update. So that was the background of how she had Spotify accounts listed. It wasn't actually Spotify hacked. Why I've removed the paste, and it is now what it is, in that there's not a listing. I've had a couple of people, I don't want to say push back, but query why it had disappeared. And one person in particular found this very quickly. They said, hey, like as soon as I removed it, because I removed it on, I think, the Sunday, and I wrote about it on Tuesday, sometime on Sunday, they've gone, hey, it's gone. And I said, yes, it has gone. I'm curious, how were you using it? And you can go and see, this is actually in the comments of my last weekly update. This person left their messages. You go and have a look at it, but basically, the things that stood out to me is that this was a person connecting via Tor using a randomized alias at a Russian mail provider. Now, take a step back. Like, these are dots that start to join up and give you a mental picture of what the person might be up to. And it doesn't paint a particularly positive picture, at least when I look at how that compares to the trends of malicious use that I've seen in the past. I see a huge amount of malicious use come from Tor because Tor is a very good anonymity network. Of course you're going to use something to keep you anonymous if you're going to be bad. I see a lot of malicious use come from Eastern Europe. And I've written about this in the past, back in August last year when I implemented the rate limit. I was seeing botnets come from Eastern Europe. And the individual who wrote these messages sort of said, oh, I like to do password cracking. And frankly, reading between the lines, I think that they were almost certainly using this for the sorts of purposes that I wanted to stop people using it. So if anything, that was kind of endorsement, you know. It's like, great, this has actually stopped someone from doing something that I don't think they should be. Look, I mean, maybe they were just password cracking. However, I think that there are many other ways of doing that without scraping people's personal data. So that's that. Now, I'm just looking at my machine over there. I am going to pause this video. I'm going to kick something else off there. And when I come back, I'm going to explain what I was doing, because the next thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about pwned passwords. Stay right there. Okay. Sorry about that. Let me explain, because this now all relates to pwned passwords. Now, I'm going to get my notes and things up here, because I think there's actually some very interesting things to talk about here. So remember last week I wrote about Passwords Evolved, Authentication Guidance for the Modern Era. And the premise here was that I went and looked at a whole bunch of NIST guidance, as well as guidance from the NCSC in the UK Gov, as well as some of Microsoft's guidance, as well as some common sense stuff. And basically, I wrote all of this stuff about, you know, that the big guys these days say that you shouldn't force password resets on a 3-monthly basis. You shouldn't force complexity criteria. All these other really interesting things which went against the grain of what we traditionally have done. Now, one of the interesting things that NIST in particular says in their guidance is that you shouldn't use passwords, or rather you shouldn't allow passwords that have previously appeared in a data breach. And this to me was very interesting because I have a lot of passwords from data breaches. And what I decided to do, this was actually whilst I was away in Europe, whilst I was there and I was reading the NIST guidance, is I thought what I should do is create a service in Have I Been Pwned so that you can see whether people have used the password before or not. So this is effectively a direct address of NIST guidelines. And it was actually quite interesting because when I wrote the thing about authentication guidance for the modern era, a bunch of people said, well, how am I, like your normal everyday person, meant to be able to check someone's password against breached passwords? And look, I knew what was coming and I kind of alluded to it a little bit, but I didn't want to sort of say until I could do it properly and kind of make a bit of a bang with it. So what I did is I went through a very large list that had plain text passwords. So for example, I went through the exploit IN list. I went through the anti-public list. I've spoken about both these before. And then I went through various other data breaches, pretty much always big ones, where there were credentials that were accessible in plain text. So I haven't gone through and done hash cracking, though. Particularly those two big combo lists were massive sources of plain text passwords, as were many of the other sources I loaded. So I had no shortage of credentials. And when I finished this exercise, I had 306 million unique credentials. Now, it's actually more than that, which is what I'm going to come back and explain in a moment. But 306 is their baseline for the moment. So I had those 306 million credentials, and I wanted to use them in two different ways. One way was I wanted a facility on Have I Been Pwned where people could search for passwords as a service. Now, let me caveat this very, very clearly by saying you should never send your client's passwords to this service. That would not be a good idea. You're basically taking their plain text passwords and then you're going, hey, let's send this up to this Aussie bloke's service. I'm sure it will be fine. I would not recommend doing that because you're taking a secret that people have given you and you're giving it to a third party who really shouldn't have it. I wanted to create this service so that normal everyday folks could go to a web browser and they could say, hey, I wonder if my password's appeared in a data breach before. And hundreds of thousands of people have done that since I launched this yesterday. Well, certainly there's been hundreds of thousands of searches. I think there's still a six-figure number of unique people, but it's been big. And this is important because what I want to see happening here is I want those penny drop moments. So I want the moment where someone goes, hey, here's my password. It's my kid's name and their birthday plus the dog. Let's go and do a search. Oh, look, that's actually been exposed somewhere. Maybe I shouldn't be using that anymore. And nothing resonates like people seeing a system confirm that their own data has previously been exposed. Now, there's a couple of things with this. So I already said, look, you really shouldn't be using this as a system provider to send clients passwords. I do say in bold text immediately above the field that you shouldn't really be doing this with a password of your own that is still in use. I'm sure many people are, so I'm definitely not logging things or anything like that. I've had a bunch of people say, you're using a GET, you shouldn't have a GET, that's a secret in a GET. First of all, none of it gets logged anywhere. Again, like I've said this many times now, none of it gets logged anywhere. Secondly, I do make the caveat of you shouldn't actually be sending this data if it is actually valuable if it's an active secret. Thirdly, what was my third item? Yes, get. Get is the semantically correct verb. Now, if I had done it with a post, because people go, I should use post, because it won't be in a log. If I had done it with a post, I'd have other people come back saying, that's not the right verb. So no matter what I do, someone's going to be unhappy. But frankly, when the data's not being logged anywhere anyway, it's a bit of a semantic argument because it's not going to be of any use. Cloudflare has very transient logs that this stuff goes into. But again, you shouldn't be doing this with real credentials anyway. Now, to caveat that, real credentials that you're actively using. A few other things here. So there is an API as well. So you can call the API, you can pass a hash to the API. Now, if you pass a hash to the API, there's a SHA-1 hash, you get an increased degree of protection of the account. Frankly, it's not much, simply because I've got hundreds of millions of passwords anyway. There's a very high chance it's going to have a hit. If it has a hit, then I already have the plain text version of the hash. I can work it back, figure out what your plain text was. No problems there. So there's that. A number of people have said what you should do is the API endpoint, and it's the same API that sits behind the public web interface, as you can call directly. Because that API accepts both a plain text password and a hash, what I should be doing is in JavaScript, when you go and you enter, let's say, password as a lowercase string into the text box, the client should hash it, and then we send the hash to the server. Now, again, look, there is really minimal value. I'm going to do it anyway. So this is one of my tasks for today, among the thing that I'm doing there, which I'll talk about in a moment. So I'm going to add that just simply because it's not hard. I think it provides really minimal value, but I understand why people have said that. Let's just do everything that we can. So I'll add that in today. So there's that. Now, the thing, though, which I think is really cool is that I've made all those 306 million hashes available for download. Now, let's just actually talk about hashes. I've got to sort of caveat why I'm saying hashes. I've got 306 million unique passwords there. I want other people to be able to use them to protect their systems and to protect their customers. I want people to be able to say, when a customer comes and signs up, hey, this password has appeared in a data breach. Now, they can then say either you can't use it at all, that's what NIST says, or they could say, hey, did you know that this password has appeared in a data breach? Maybe you should choose a better one. It's up to them. I'm not here to dictate how people use the data. I just want to give them choices. So this is the way I want people to use it. So when someone registers, when they change their password, even when they log in, you could say, hey, you've just logged in. Did you know the password that you use is actually one that's appeared in a data breach before? Now, I wanted to do that, but I'm also conscious that passwords do have personally identifiable info. Some of them do. Some of them are email addresses. And I point out in the blog post that the most common password hint from the Adobe data breach was email, like literally just the string email. In other words, people are using their email address as their password. People are using other personally identifiable or sensitive things as a password. And I wanted to have a layer of protection against that, whilst also distributing those passwords out. So I SHA-1 hashed them all. So I have 306 million plain text passwords on that machine. Incidentally, that's my Lenovo P50 with 64 gigabytes of RAM and a Xeon processor. This is why I have it, so I can crunch data like this. So I have the plain text values, but I SHA-1 hashed them all as well, just for good measure. So what it means is that when you download these 306 million records, what you actually got here is hashes. You could crack them, which wouldn't be particularly fun. You'd be better off just going and downloading the exploit IN and the anti-public list that has them all in plain text anyway. Or you could go through and you could just compare strings that are provided to you with the ones in the list after hashing them. So for example, someone registers on the site, you take their password, you SHA-1 hash it, you compare it to my database. If they match, you know that the password has previously been pwned. This is not meant to be foolproof. Like I said, you could just go and get the password plain text values anyway. It's meant to give protection to people who have used PII stuff in their passwords. So that's sort of a little bit of background there as to why they're hashes. I'm making them available as a 5.3 gigabyte 7-zip file. That was a little bit more efficient than using a zip per se. So it's a 5.3 gigabyte file. I needed to distribute this somewhere without having, or some way, without having to explain to my wife where the money has suddenly gone. Because it turns out that distributing a 5.3 gigabyte file en masse is actually expensive. Now, when I say en masse, I mean there's going to be a lot of terabytes worth of data that go out here. So I put out a tweet, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and said, look, I want to try and serve this file, serve a file. I didn't say what it was. What's the most efficient way? And people had suggestions about like Dropbox and OneDrive. You can't do that because you can't distribute that to masses of people. They cut you off very, very quickly. Ask me how I know. You also really can't use most file hosting services without breaking the bank. And I think the cheapest was Backblaze B2. And from memory, they were about 2 cents a gigabyte. So you're looking at around about 10 cents every time someone downloads this, a dollar for 10 downloads. If I get to 10,000 downloads, there goes a grand. So you see that the challenge here. I don't want to have to say, hey, darling, we just spent $1,000 for other people to download other people's passwords. That is a very odd discussion to have. So fortunately, Cloudflare came to the party, and I have spoken very, very significantly about Cloudflare at different times in terms of all the ways that I've used it over the years. I think they're a great service, full stop, for many reasons. If you're not sure why, go and look at the Cloudflare tag on my blog. But they came to the party and said, look, we will help support you to deliver this by giving you a plan that allows it to be cached at our edge nodes. And I want to give you some stats. Now, these stats weren't actually in the blog post because I didn't have them at the time I wrote the blog post. But I'm in my Cloudflare portal now, and I'm going to go down to my pwnedpasswords.com site because I deliver these off pwnedpasswords.com, downloads.pwnedpasswords.com. Now, let me give you some interesting stats here about why caching is so important. There has been 25.41 terabytes worth of downloads pretty much just in the last 12 hours, maybe 13, 14 hours. Out of that 25 something terabytes, I've had to pay for about 17 gigabytes worth of data. In other words, more than 99% of my bandwidth has been taken off my origin, and the origin for this is Azure Blob Storage. Azure Blob Storage, I would have paid, I think I worked out about 60 cents every time someone downloads this file. 10,000 downloads, off the top of my head, there's about $6,000. That would not have been a happy discussion at home. So they have made a really fundamental difference. If it's 66, I've probably ended up paying less than $2 for bandwidth out of my blob storage. So a massive thank you for Cloudflare for doing that. I really like what they do, not just in terms of technology, but I really like their philosophy of genuinely wanting to make the web a better place. And them supporting Pwned Passwords speaks to that. Now, let's talk about this and why I keep turning around looking at this machine and seeming kind of anxious. I got all of this up and loaded. I actually had to make a few last minute changes as well. There are some issues around things like when I originally created the hashes, I was creating the hashes off an nvarchar, which was effectively using Unicode inputs. The hashes that I was creating were not consistent with the hashes of a UTF-8 string. And I realized this before I went live, but quite late in the piece, and I was having to very rapidly recreate hashes. I had to get my 5.3 gigabyte file back up into the cloud fairly quickly. I had to get all of that into table storage in Azure, which is the underlying data structure which the API and the website search sits on top of. I had to do all that quite quickly. And I also tried to do that over our shitty Australian internet connection, which meant using my phone and paying the 4G bandwidth off the phone just in order to get uploaded. In short, stuff was a bit of a rush. I didn't leave as much time for testing as what I should have. And whilst it works most of the time for most things, I noticed last night, and of course I launched it late last night as well, didn't I? I noticed a few people saying things like, wow, why isn't password with a capital P pwned? You know, that's really weird. And I'm going, well, that is really weird. I guess for some reason it just wasn't in one of the data sources. Maybe the data sources blocked that. I don't know. And I really didn't give it enough thought at the time. And I got up early this morning. I got up, I woke up of my own accord just after 5 a.m. And I woke up with this epiphany. And the epiphany was the collation in the SQL database that I did a lot of the matching and joining and uniqueness of getting passwords was a case insensitive collation. So bottom line is that there are 306 million passwords out there. There should be more because this doesn't account for variances in case. Now, having said that, I don't know how many more there's going to be. I'll be surprised if there are 100 million more. So having said that, one of the things we do know about passwords is that people tend to fall down to the lowest possible criteria, which usually means just a lowercase string. So I'm actually a little bit surprised that I only got a very small amount of feedback from the 100,000 plus people that have used this about oddities with case. So my suspicion is that a lot of people are just trying their usual shitty lowercase passwords and that works just fine. What it means, though, is that I need to go and churn through this now that I've sorted out my collation, and I'm going to have a cumulative update. And this is the way I'm going to do this. Now, I had to plan for this anyway, because over time, I will add more data sets, and there will be more things to load. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull in all these sources, add all the new stuff. There'll be a cumulative update, and it will be, here is another zip file to download with some number of, I assume, probably tens of millions of passwords in addition to the 306 million. So that will be there. And obviously, I'll load all of those back up into the cloud, into table storage as well, so that the web interface updates too. I have been kicking myself this morning for doing this. Like, it was a stupid thing, and I should have realized it earlier on. But it is one of those things, and I've just got to sort it out and get on with it now. So that is actually running a query right now to build up that cumulative change. The reason I had to turn around and sort it out earlier on is that I just filled up the tempdb, or rather I filled up the capacity of the drive that the tempdb sits on. So unfortunately I had to flush that out, make some space, and now it's firing again. So I hope that by the time I put this video out, I actually have not just a whole bunch of extra passwords in table storage, but I have cumulative update one sitting there ready to rock and roll for you guys to download. So a little bit of a hiccup on the start there, but not a biggie, something that we can overcome quite easily. So that's what that is about, pwned passwords. And I'm really hoping that as people roll this out into their systems, they let me know what they've done, because I would really like to hear from people how you've actually used this. So do please let me know. So tell me, if you use this system, and particularly if it's on a public site where I can see it in action as well, I'd love to know what sort of middle road you take, or what road you take. You know, like, do you block altogether? Do you warn? Do you just use it as metrics, just so that you've got some sense of how many people are using pwned passwords? So do please let me know how you use that. Now, last thing here as well, I'm being sponsored this week by Barclay. Barclay have been a sponsor many times before in the past, so it's great to have them back. I'm really happy that they are there on an absolutely epically big week as well, because I have had much, much higher than usual traffic this week. Tens of thousands of people a day on average, or many, many tens of thousands. I normally have probably 20,000-ish a day. It's been much higher than that, which is great. So good news for those guys. I have some sponsor slots coming up later on in the year, so if anyone else wants to jump on those, do go and hit the sponsor link somewhere up the top of my blog. And that is that for this week. So I'm going to finish this. I'm going to go and do the thing with the hashing on the web front end so that it hashes those passwords. I'm going to go and get all this other data loaded in. And then hopefully by the time I get to the end of the day, I can relax having all of that done and not feeling quite so stupid about my collation issues. Thanks for watching, guys.